Steering committee is back. Back in Ryan's garage.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah,
we're here. You're drinking a nice Brews beer over there, aren't you?
I am. I'm treating myself to our sponsor, Brews Beer. They make badass Belgian beers. I'm having their Hellraiser. Hellraiser, as I like to call it.
We do love some Brews beers.
I do love Brews beers.
But I need to make a stop because right now I'm drinking a Rolling Rock.
Kind of the opposite of a Brews beer. Yeah. but don't worry, you got a good deal.
Do you remember when Rolling Rock was not like the cheap, quite the cheap beer that it is now? Now it's like they're next to like the Natty Light. And there was a time I feel like it was a little more elevated.
I guess. I don't know.
It was from the glass-lined whatever's in Latrobe.
Old Latrobe, Pennsylvania.
But now they make it in Denver and LA. It's not the same thing.
Oh, okay. Do they still make it in Old Latrobe?
I don't know. Damned if I know, but all I know is that these were... I bought 4 18 packs for $5.99 each with a special digital coupon from King Supers, our local grocery chain. So, it's not quite the same. So
okay.
One of us is a real man, and it's with this pale lager here.
Whatever floats your boat. The price, you can't be the price.
So, Brews Beers.
But Brews Beers.
Real beer.
So, again, now picture the opposite of Rolling Rock, which is Brews Beers. This one's a Belgian style golden strong ale. It's got a little bit of a sort of a sweet aromatic sort of like aftertaste to it. So, yeah.
It does look delicious. So, shout out to Brews Beers.
Shout out to Brews.
I appreciate your support.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Visit their locations, Brews on Facts. Yeah. There's our tap room. That's our favorite tap room to go to.
Although now it's cold in Denver. We were in the garage.
Yeah.
We had a heater on, which we had to turn off. Mm-hmm. And Doug has no shoes on. So
I have no shoes. Cold.
I'm trying to be kind walking through the house.
I thought that was the rule. I have to take off the shoes and I
come here. I appreciate that. You've got a flannel on. So
I got a flannel. I got my shorts on. I'm from New England. I'm not worried about the cold at all.
Yeah. Cold probably matter. Shouldn't be worried about the acoustics in my garage because I know they're crap. But
it's a garage session.
Yeah, it didn't help that out.
It's okay. We're like a garage band.
Yeah, no guests tonight.
No guests. No, we're throwing it back to old school, just crew show. So since we last talked, the last time you and I sat down together, you just purchased this GT4.
Yes.
And then we got a chance to drink in the details of it visually. I've now had a chance to ride in it with you.
Yeah, dirt on its shoulder now.
Well, it's good. Yes, exactly. You got to get that dirt off the shoulder.
That's right. First thing you noticed. Yeah,
but, I got to drive with it. You took me out. You're kind enough to take me for a quick spin in it.
Well, it's still
weekend,
here.
So.
The repo man hasn't come knocking quite yet.
They haven't found you yet, we got a few more months for that before they get around to doing it.
Sounds like keeping the garage, I'm good, right? That's what the law is in Colorado, but it seems to be probably what
They're not allowed to break any laws repossessing the car, so that's correct. Yeah, you wouldn't be able to. Because if they came in here, they'd be trespassing.
Well,
in
Colorado Credit Union, if you're listening, I'm not serious. Quite a good track record. Stellar track record with you all. So, it's still here.
But theoretically, as long as you keep it here.
I was afraid I was going to wake up and it wouldn't actually exist.
It was just a dream. Yeah.
Used to read Word Up magazine. At 560 miles on it now.
Okay, so you're allowed to let it rip a little bit, right?
I'm already paranoid. The tires are quickly disappearing, but I held tight and I kept to the break-in schedule. Some people believe in this, some people don't. Kind of somewhere in between.
Yeah.
Of course, the joke is that the break-in is only for the Americans. So you don't wrap around a tree. The Germans don't have a break-in schedule. It's a fun car. So 500 miles. I won't lie. I mean, you're supposed to keep it under 5,000 RPM. I hit 6, 7 a couple times toward the end there.
Yeah.
But it was nice to at 500 miles really hit that red line. And not only did I hit the red line, the red line limiter.
Yeah, I was with you once when you did that.
Yeah, Fair always talks about how cool it is in the GT cars. And it is different. It's a hard limiter versus the... You know, the other couple of Porsches I've had where it seems to be able to dip into the red a little bit.
Okay.
This is, right there at 8 or 8,100. So
as in like the other ones, it would be like you're in there for a little, if it's in there for too long, then it cuts you off.
Yeah. I feel like it gives you a few extra, couple 300 extra revs, RPMs.
Okay.
But this one seems
to be hard. And what happens when you hit it with this one?
it does this sort of, and then, you know, it's just, yeah, it gives you a cut off right away. Yeah, it sort of lets you know it's not happy, but.
And remind me, where's Redline on this again?
So I've read it's 8 or 8100. So if you look, it's gray until 8000, and then the Redline doesn't start till a little over, let's call it 8000. But,
okay.
But yeah, it's, what'd you think?
It's incredible. It's absolutely.
We didn't go too far.
We didn't get to do its party piece, which would be like, you know, carving up a really twisted canyon. Right?
Yeah, I've only done that once.
So yeah, and that's honestly, it was hugely impressive doing the things that it's not even designed to really do well. Like it's when you get into it, it feels very special. It doesn't just look like the higher trim package of your previous car. You get into it and there's a sense of, I mean, even just approaching it and just getting into it, there's a sense that there's like,
more
there's
something special. Right?
Yeah, exactly. All the surfaces, I haven't looked at every single one of them, but a significant amount of the ones that you're in contact with are of higher quality materials.
Alcantara, you know, on a lot of things, and I didn't even, I don't believe there's any extra Alcantara or anything option on this, so. You could get more.
What's interesting is that it's the highest level of the Cayman platform, but it's an entry level version of it.
And well, if still you want to call it that, Doug.
Well, I just meant like it's
six grand options. which I guess in the Porsche world is not much.
That's
but,
it.
Yeah,
that's just get, that's what they call getting started.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I just meant like, but even you know. It's significant that like every single material that you touch is high quality.
Yeah,
and just nice.
Even the dash trim. And if we've talked so many times about how I would spec this and how this has sort of ended up being the perfect spec, I think one thing I still probably would have done if it's not a big deal. But I like the rarely ordered but oft overlooked leather trim piece. That's a free option on these cars. And that may be one thing I would have done. But even that it's brushed, I don't know if it's brushed aluminum or something in this car.
Yeah.
The other car was just sort of a plain finish. Just everything seems a little more substantial, a little thicker. And I should say, one of the reasons I haven't driven it more, even, is I am still waiting to get it in for paint correction and then ceramic coating. And then, of course, somewhere in the middle there, paint protection film. Most of the surfaces, I don't think I'm going to do the doors, but in maybe the hatch, but just about everything else will be covered. You got to draw the line somewhere, but our friends at Denver Auto Shield here in Denver, place all the Porsche guys seem to go. We stopped by, said hi to Jeff.
We checked out the facility. Very impressive.
It is. Yeah. And Jeff, I forgot to ask you if that Alfa Quattrofoglio up front was my friend's name, right? Quattrofoglio.
As far as I know.
Yeah. The Q.
I have a tenuous grasp on the English.
The Giulia Quattrofoglio.
Let alone Italian, but
cool cars in the shop.
Yeah, well, there was at a Pista, right?
It was a limited edition. But you can only buy it if you were involved in the Ferrari Challenge.
It was a gorgeous blue with the Italian sort of red, green, and white stripes sort of accent on it. It was incredible.
Was it the Pelotti shoe colors or something? He said, I don't know.
He explained what it was, and I don't tend to like that stuff, but this was done really
well. It's beautiful.
Really,
it's beautiful.
And the blue. I love the Ferrari in blue. I think that's one of my favorite colors.
Yeah. Color that Enzo Ferrari, was it Enzo Ferrari that always liked this blue color? One of my Ferrari friends will know this, but it's a certain blue that he would always order on his cars.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think it may have been that color. That's the move right there. You know, and I'm not generally a red car guy, although some cars look amazing in red, and Ferraris generally look good in red, but this looked even better. So looking forward, Jeff, to getting in and getting the car wrapped.
Yeah, I think they'll take care of it there. Yeah. So
looking forward to that.
But yeah, I mean, again, getting back to my sort of impressions, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, you know, and then you'd be driving along and we'd be kind of just sort of, you know, puttering around like normally, but then you'd absolutely dig into it for a second.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you're just reminded like, oh, okay, this thing is a beast.
Yeah.
And it has this, you know, this great throaty, sound that it definitely get. You were saying this. It gets better as you drive it longer.
It warms up.
Yeah,
after the old car was.
Yeah.
Like that.
But it changes. It just becomes a little more ferocious, a little more of a bulldog.
Definitely gets a lot more looks, which is so funny because you know, you think most people wouldn't know the difference, but I think it does sit an inch or two lower. It's, you know, got the wings and the, you know, the deep front end and all that, but a lot of looks. Only, somehow, only guys, this is not the car you want to drive to pick up women.
Yeah.
No women notice this car, you know, beyond it, maybe just being a Porsche or whatever, but pretty much every guy between the age of about 20 and 60 turns their head, and maybe above and beyond that, or above and below that span, but it gets a lot of looks, a lot of thumbs up, and you know,
yeah,
so far no police attention, so that's good. Although with you in the car, I feel like I have a force field of legal immunity or something.
Yeah,
or
you shouldn't think defense. That. You should not think that. Yeah, I'll tell you. you'd have your lawyer who'd probably be taking care of all your problems right there.
The result happens later. Yes.
Yeah, the result happens later. But if anything really bad happens, we'd have to have you hire another lawyer because they'll have to call me as a witness. I can't call myself as a witness.
I have a pretty good track record of avoiding the popo, as the kids say. So
hopefully, you have the Valentine one, Valentine two, or is it a Valentine?
No, it's like an 8 or 9 or 10 year old. I think I bought that when I bought my 997 Carrera S. So, 10 years ago.
Okay.
And hasn't failed me yet. I've done the upgrades at least once, but the big exciting thing is I can finally get this thing out of my garage now because you know this whole saga.
Yeah.
This car is so low. I mean, it's the lowest car by far I've ever had. There's no nose lift or anything.
I was going to say, it somehow makes your old Cayman look like a crossover somehow because it's so low. Yeah.
Well, you can get three fingers between the top of the tire and the lip of the fender in the old car. And this, you're hard-pressed to get one. It's about as low as you'd want. And
yeah.
You've seen my driveway. My driveway maybe has a 5-degree angle on it, if that. It's about as flat as a driveway gets.
Yeah.
And we are on a flat street. We're not on a hill or anything, but we have these awful, I think we call them rolled curbs, which are pretty common in Denver.
Yeah.
At least, you know, when this neighborhood was built, where you've got a kind of a 45-degree angle. There's no cutout for your driveway, right, unless you opt to have that installed on your own dime. And so I first tried to cheap out. I think I mentioned this in the last podcast. I got a couple industrial ramps from Industrial Products catalog that were laughably small when they arrived and just didn't work. And so I had to break that.
I'm not sure what those were ramps for. I'm not sure what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. You're walking cooler probably or something. You know, I don't know.
Your kid's power whips.
They're very sturdy. Yeah. They just didn't work. Because I didn't want to have a pile of 2x4s in front of my house, I stepped up and bought these Bridget ramps. And the last thing I was in a position to do was spend another $400 on something for this car. But they made all the difference in the world. But even with those, I scraped the first time as careful as I was.
Really?
So I realized there's a bit of a crown to our street in front of our house. And so on one side of our driveway, it's a little bit less crowned. And so I had to slide it. Anyway.
Is that why you decided to put it where?
It's not like on the side of the garage where the car just sits. It's where the daily driver sits. And I still have to back in and back out and do it at sort of an L-shaped, and it's kind of an ordeal. And, hey, it'll help keep the miles down.
I take it you haven't taken your daughter to school in this thing yet,
have you? I haven't. You know, there's some bastard at her school that drives a 911 Touring, a silver one, GT Silver. And I think both times I've mentioned this car, I've referred to him as a bastard, and I'm sure he's a wonderful person.
A guy we're extremely jealous of.
And honestly, that's about the only car I would want more than this. You know, I mean, it is a cool, cool car. Even a little more understated and all that, being the Touring without the wing, but of course that has a back seat. I think he must have had a back seat, because I swear I saw a kid crawling out from the back, unless he was just riding on the cargo shelf.
So I think what we know is that car, it doesn't come with it standard. It's certainly something you have to option back in, or you have to have it custom made in. But I think, I was looking at it. And I don't know how long this commute is, but I would throw my kid back there for if I was like a mile or two away.
The cargo net, is, if you get the sport seats plus versus the buckets, you can get the back seat. That's how that breaks down.
Oh, so if you get the sports, so where's sport seat plus compared to?
Those are the ones that are in this.
Okay.
So if you opted for these seats in the GT3, I believe, at least in the Touring, you get the back seat.
Is that the most comfortable seat then?
Yeah, that would be the comfort seat. It is in this car. So you have the same two options.
Okay, all right. So if you get those, then you think you get the regular seats.
Right, and I believe Right. Or at least, I don't know if they come with the backseat, but at least I think you have that option.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's a factory option or you have to retrofit it. I don't know. Someone correct us. But
yeah.
It's. I want to hear more of your impressions, I guess, before I start up again. So you like it? I mean,
I love it. No,
does it feel faster? I mean, we don't know it's faster, but it's a more progressive building of speed.
What I would say is that it's what it felt like, at least from what we were doing, and we weren't. I mean, you rocketed up to some allegedly high speeds for super periods of time.
First gear,
you're only the top end of second gear. So. But it's definitely more immediate, which I know sounds obvious, but
yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't have said your previous car had turbo lag, at least not in the traditional sense.
Not turbo lag, but you have that, the turbo comes on at a certain, it's very on and off.
It's definitely like you're right. There's a point where it's just the engine and then the turbo kicks in and gives you that extra
little push.
Boot there. But this is just, you're dancing on that gas pedal and however much gas you give it is like immediate response to it. It just takes off. That's what I remember from our drive is that we'd be talking, we'd be chatting, we'd be quiet, and then suddenly you just like, for some reason you would just like plant it, and suddenly it's like, oh, we're going.
In this car,
and we would stop talking. No, in this car.
Oh, this car.
And we'd stop talking because like suddenly it's like, oh, we're back into it, and it's like the sound takes over, you're launched down the road, and you just call out an obscenely high number really quickly.
So, well, that's it.
I won't say it, but like some obscenely high number really quickly.
In a weird way, the other car felt faster because it just moved more, and I had that fab speed exhaust, and so I think when you were in the power, the other car may have been louder, but I don't think there's any like sound symposer crap on this one or anything. So I think this one's probably actually louder on the outside. There was a man we always joke about, all the cool cars never leave the Cherry Creek area, where the mall is here in Denver, the nice mall, I guess you could say. And so we had to pour one out and drive through Cherry Creek. There was one man walking his dog who put his fingers in his ear.
I didn't see that.
I think it's louder on the outside than it seems on the inside, if that makes sense. The other car had a little more drum on the inside, maybe a little less on the outside. I'm coming from like burbles and pops and cracks. And that was a different thing. I think people, if you would let off the gas, like in the city, it'd sound like a gunshot or something.
I remember I was outside one time when you pulled up early on when you just put the exhaust on. There was a lot going on with it.
There was a lot going on, for better or worse.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it sounded cool, but there was a lot. Yeah, it's as you were, I can picture exactly what you're doing. You were taking off because you were about to turn into the parking lot where I was. And there was just a lot of cracks, pops, bangs, whizzes, and things like that. And it just.
Which I never turned off.
Yeah. And so could you with that?
If you turned the sport button off, you would get a lot less of that. And I just,
does this thing have like what they call like a neighbor mode? Does it have like a good neighbor?
This has an exhaust button, but the weird thing is the bell, until you're up in the meat of things, it's not real different. I believe that the valves are open. When that button is on, I think the valves open up, but you really don't hear it until then the valves close again, and then they open up at like 5,000 RPM or something. So it's kind of weird. I think all the new GT cars do that. But it's Doug, it is getting very cold in here. Are you going to be okay?
I'm good.
All right. Maybe we can take a break and turn the heater back on for a minute. But
okay. Well, we're coming up to our first break.
Okay. All right. I've got a coat on, and he's showing off his legs here. It's
I'm from New England, man.
That's right.
Yeah. Although you're from a cold part of the country, too, so I don't know.
There's that.
I'm trying to make you feel better. But, no.
It's a very different driving car. We've talked about this before. Other than the basic body shell, it doesn't seem like the same car. And I talk about this all the time. Big fan of the old car, which, by the way, is now for sale. It's taken 2 or 3 weeks, but... Yeah. And there's still no pictures. Travis is going to get on this. But my old car is now for sale at
Porsche Colorado Springs. Yeah, it's a great spec. Someone should definitely consider it. It's a great driving spec.
You could have bought it for me and saved a few thousand dollars. No, but it's there. Yeah. And they have, it's obviously marked up. But it's almost exactly what we predicted it would be listed at.
Yep.
And so no complaints there. But someone's going to get a great car. And if you're listening to this and you end up buying my old car,
yeah, please reach out to us.
Please mention it.
Yeah, and reach out to us.
Yes. Yeah. And Travis can give me that swag. He promised me way back when. I'm kidding. That's for sale. So if someone buy it, it's a great car, and you'll be very happy. And other than the one stone chip on the hood and the fender, it's about as nice as a car with, you know, what did
trust
it, 22,000 miles?
Audience, trust me, this car is pristine. Ryan took immaculate care of this car. Yeah. So, and it's, like we said, we talked about it. It was a, it's like a T-spec before there was a T-spec. It's got all the driver's options.
For half the price, basically.
Yeah, I know. And it's got, he found the best one he could and bought it and kept very good care of it.
Can we talk about the fact that I've seen a couple of new T's listed for sale within $15,000 of what I paid for this GT4?
That's absurd.
I mean, I think that's silly. Go buy yourself a base and you'll be... It's 99% the same car. It's silly. So,
yeah, that's absurd. Which reminds me, we'll go into this on the next one. I was playing around with the configurator on the base Cayman.
Oh, you were.
I found my new favorite frivolous option on the Porsche website. So
okay, all right.
I'll leave you that.
All right, we're just getting started, folks. So, We're back. Tell me about this configurator.
It's a cliffhanger. That's how you keep them on the edge of their seat.
What were you building?
I was building a base Cayman.
So there are new options for 2021, or
I don't even know, because I didn't know the configurator as well as maybe you did. But I tell you my new favorite option. So this is what I basically did: is I went in and I wanted to get. I don't like the wheels as much.
Change the wheels at all?
They're. I think you. Well, so you what you had was the 19-inch
the middle, yeah,
19-inch. And then I also don't mind on that particular car. At least in the pictures, I like the Boxster wheels on the Cayman. No, they're 18s. They're very similar. They're kind of the spindly sort of like five spoke alloys. But they're just, they look nice. I didn't like anything else. Even the expensive ones, I didn't like at all.
Well, that's why I got the 19s, because I felt like they were sort of the best compromise. And
So then the thing is that I went to the seats, which is kind of the next important thing for me.
Yeah.
On the entry level sort of comfort seats, I got the perfect color combination. But when I want to get the seats I want, I have to go to all black. But from a color perspective, you can do...
It's like the inserts in the middle, basically.
You could do red. You can do, it's like 50-50 red-black. Silver car on the outside.
I would do all red or all black, but I do not like those.
I loved it.
But a lot of people do.
Yeah, it's an aesthetic thing. Yeah, I mean, the all red is a little bit... I mean, the all red on the newer cars is better. Yeah. Some of the old Caymans, I'll come across the one that's... It's too much red. It's all red. Yeah. It's like everything is red on the inside. I still kind of like it. I'm on kind of a red.
You know what the ugly configurator contest, I think Nick Murray does it on his...
Oh, no.
By the way, speaking of different strokes, if you ever like can't sleep, go to YouTube and punch in different strokes. I think it's Evil Music. Hmm. And you're old enough. You remember Different Strokes, right?
The TV show?
Yeah, the TV show with Conrad Bain and... This is the name that I brought up.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, Gary Coleman. Yeah, you remember the beginning? Like, it's got this, you know, kind of upbeat song, you know, this old white man comes and gets the
teeth. Oh, yeah, yeah, no, I've heard this. They make it a sinister, basically.
Yes, they make it a sinister. And so, basically, just based on the music, it's like the kids are getting abducted.
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing. Anyway. Yeah. But Nick Murray does this. So, Nick Murray's YouTube channel, he does this, you know, how can you build out the ugliest Porsche in the configurator?
Okay.
And oftentimes, it comes down to, like, a yellow car with a red interior or, you know, and then wood or something. just like, you know, and green seatbelts or whatever.
There's so many options on
the Porsche. It's crazy. I think some car
I think for that, you'd have to do like a different color for the Sport Chrono. You'd have to get the Sport Chrono a different Sport Chrono.
It's tan or something. Yeah. Just like
so your Porsche looks like a Swatch watch, basically.
If you do it right, you could, you know, I'd probably get to a point where it's so ugly it's good and probably be worth millions someday.
Yeah.
But I don't think Porsche...
It'd definitely be a one of one.
But look at the cars that are popular now from the 60s and 70s that are, you know, the Bahama Yellow and all these, you know, funky colors, you know, but... lava orange and stuff, you were building a Cayman.
Well, yeah, so I was just building a Cayman, just having some fun with it. I went, you know, base spec. I've kind of got this new philosophy where if I ever were to buy one, I need to buy a base Cayman. I need to go through Formula, you know, 3000 before I get to Formula 2, before I get to Formula 1. You have to
And this is why the 2086 is such a great car.
I know. And
it's your first sports car.
Well, so we can talk about my dilemma these days about that too. But I'm you know, not many options. Obviously, clicked off the smokers package. Thanks for the heads up on that.
That's I'm telling you now, everyone's zero, got a smokers package.
That's gonna be $700 next year. It's a $0 option right now, and it makes the interior look so much nicer.
I think so. And if you use a battery tender or something, you know, you've got a convenient place to plug it in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there you go. I mean, it's again, that's been our top tip for a few months now. So.
Yeah. And as we've agreed on, you want to be, what was it? How do we phrase it? It better be the top tip than the bottom tip. The bottom. Sorry, I screwed that up. But when we said in real time, it was kind of mildly amusing. But anyway,
Oh, wow. my new favorite frivolous option, I went all the way to the end. I think it's under like sport technique, you know, or something, or accessories
know if I've,
or things
perused
like that. This goes all the way to the bottom. You can get a toolkit.
Really?
Yeah. For your Porsche.
God, I thought I wouldn't.
It's awesome. It comes in like a zipper binder.
It's not $1,500.
But it's all leather. I think it's like $400.
Well, you've got to get that because in 30 years when your car's going to be 18, it's going to be worth
$1,200. $27,000 for just that. Yeah. I mean, I think it's not quite the same because those cars is worth a lot because it was supposed to come with it.
Yeah.
So it's good when you have it still.
Well, in Europe, don't they all come with toolkits and triangles and safety vests and all
they
that?
They might. But this basically looks like a big, nice, like picture a nice big leather planner that's thick and has a zipper around it.
Okay.
And you open it up and it's like, it's a nice set of wrenches and tools in it. I love it. I have to have that. If I was buying, if I was optioning out a new
Where does it go
Porsche,
in the cars? In the frunk?
That I don't know. I mean, you might have options. I don't know if it's a specific place to go for.
Strapped to the
You should get one
cargo,
for your car. You should go order. You should be able to order it.
I don't
Porsche.
Think I saw that on the GT4 configurator though. But
we'll
maybe
look
it's
to
there.
See. We'll look to see if it's
okay.
There.
No,
because I don't think it's specific to the. I think it's just a gimmick. But I don't think it's only tools. Well, there's not a lot of
gloves.
No, but there should be. I mean, but you can get. I mean, in this section, there's an entire part where they have like a detail kit. They have like an interior cleaning kit. They have like a waxing kit that's all Porsche.
Yeah, I've seen that stuff. Yeah, I've never noticed the toolkit.
Yeah, it's
there. Maybe I saw the price and how much was it?
Don't quote me, but it was. I know it was under $1,000. I think it was like $400.
For $400, I probably would have.
Yeah. It's fun. You know?
You'd
never use it. It would be a complete. I mean, but again, picture yourself relisting the car on Bring a Trailer, and you have to show, like, when people show their Ferraris, they have to show that they have the Ferraris still come with a mechanics kit still.
Yeah.
And it's like an important accessory. It's just for guys like us, these are just accessories that we have to have.
But with the Cayman, you don't have a lot of engine access unless you remove the back. So I can't imagine doing any real car surgery on the side of the road.
Not with this toolkit. Yeah. I mean, like, it would be too nice to, like, you can go buy a kit from, you know, O'Reilly's for a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
That has everything in this thing.
Same stuff, yeah.
But, like, this is like jewelry for us.
Please
this is like
the tools
accessory.
Made in Germany and not in
I hope so.
Taiwan or something.
I hope so, yeah.
Well, that's
maybe in Finland. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, that's right. Depending on, well, we've talked about that, right? Who's building your Porsche, right?
Have you figured out where this one was built?
I realized
that. I assume Germany.
Yeah, I want to say, I think they're all, so I believe all the Caymans now currently are built in Germany.
Okay.
But there are a couple different places. There's the place outside of Stuttgart, and then there's another location.
Oh, Leipzig?
I believe so.
Yeah.
And I believe that I saw somewhere
those used to be the two, when you were taking European delivery, those are the two places you could do it from.
I think both of my Caymans have been from the Stuttgart. But it's funny you asked that because I realized I didn't get the sticker with this car. And in the old car, it was this laminated thing. Mm. And in this car, when I saw pictures of the car in transit, I could have sworn that the sticker was in the window, which was I thought was kind of weird, and it was laminated. But maybe they laminate the stickers at the dealership, and this just never really got off the truck and, you know, came right to me. And so I gave my friend Travis at the dealership I didn't call him. I emailed him, and I just asked if he knew where it was. And he said, look at the glove box. And, of course, I haven't done that. Because I really would like to
so it could still be in there.
I haven't even looked in the glove box, I don't think. So,
have you opened your glove box? You haven't?
I don't think so.
Oh, wow.
It could be. Maybe that's where the swag is.
That's where there might be like three t-shirts in there. It's a bunch of
dumbbells. I don't
probably know. Not, yeah. It's not that big a glove box, but.
No. Oh, and by the way, our friend Travis Fodge at Porsche Colorado Springs has a YouTube channel. Check it out. So Travis Fodge on YouTube, and he shows all the cool cars that come in, all the used cars that come in. I'm waiting with bated breath for my old car to show up. I guess what I'm getting at is if I had that sticker, I could tell you for sure. So more to come. We will revisit this.
We will look at maybe during our next break. We'll open up your glove box.
Well, you know, I put the car in the garage. I didn't even come up look at it for 2 days because I felt guilty for buying if I click my heels 3 times, it'll stay.
Now, if you'd said that you didn't come out of the garage because you had to go in and work really hard to actually afford what you bought, I could understand that. But like when I got the last time I got a brand new car, I played with it endlessly. Like
I was up of guilt and shame that I
granted the new car.
I found my first Playboy magazine. And
fair enough. Granted, the car I bought was less than some of the options on this car.
No.
But it was a WRX that I had. I just went
out. I just forgot you bought that new.
Brand new. Yeah.
Young lawyer.
Yeah, young. We had no kids. The world was all sunshine and puppy dogs at that point. But so I told you I missed that car. But although I don't think I'd ever buy it again, though. I was thinking about that again after you said that.
How old are you now?
It doesn't matter.
You're within a couple years of me.
I'm 42.
Well, in 3 years. Okay.
It's just life's too short.
Tastes change too.
Tastes change. You know, and it's not even that I don't like the car. It's just that life is too short to buy the same car.
I'm gonna grab a rolling rock here.
Okay. I'll
how's your Bruce beer is there?
I'll take a rolling rock.
Well, we have Bud Light, we have all the options here.
Well, you said our audience should get to know us a little bit. Actually, I have more in here.
First, this is a personality test. Bud Light or Rolling Rock?
Bud Light, well, it's not even a contest for me. Bud Light is like my least favorite beer of all time. So,
you don't like that sweet, sweet corn syrup?
Bud Light is the only beer I drink where even as I'm drinking one beer, I hate it, and I feel like I'm already getting like a pre hangover from it. Like, I hate the taste of
Miller's.
It.
Is far off.
I'm not even a snob. I will drink Budweiser's all day long. I will drink Coors Light. I love all those beers, but like Bud Light is the only beer I really hate to drink.
I only got it was on sale. I figured I wouldn't drink it, so there'd always be beer.
So it wasn't just to insult me. offend my senses.
No, given the choice, you got to go Miller every time.
Yeah, I mean, Miller. I like Miller and Miller Lite. I mean, I think they're both great. Is there a Miller? There's only a Miller Lite, I guess. But it's not that I'm a snob. It's just I happen to really hate that particular.
Shout out to my friend Jessica, whose grandmother is the woman in the moon on the.
On the champagne beer beers.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Anyway, so yeah.
Wow. Okay.
We're jumping all around. I want to tell us. We've had some questions about who we are. People have just started listening. Yeah. Kind of,
our audience knows that I hate Bud Light.
But come back to your configurator. So you're building out this thing. You found the tool box, which now need.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like your life is incomplete until you have it.
Yeah.
Wait till I show it to you. You're gonna love it.
I think I will.
And then, what I kind of wanted was a silver on the outside, slight red on the inside, nice wheels.
Uh-huh.
You know, kind of what you had, like a nice
GT silver.
So you can
get the GT silver.
I would actually. That'd be one of the few things I would do. It would be one of the metallic paint options. I would do that.
Yeah. It's what $600.
It seems like a good. Having the color of the car is really important. Having that right, I think. So
in the GT silver, it's not very metallic. I don't really see flex or anything in it, which I like.
Yeah.
It's not a metallic. It's not like a bass boat, like some silvers are. It's almost a non-metallic silver, if that makes sense.
It's like it's almost like a shiny gray.
Really. It really is. Yeah. Which is interesting.
It's great. I mean, I know people say like you should get. People are tired of boring colored cars or whatever. I think Porsches in silver just look
right. Classic, timeless.
It is. It's timeless. It's classic. It's like a look.
Yeah. And the bright colors are only cool every 30 years.
Yeah. Wait, what? Say it again?
The crazy paint to sample colors.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is, you might be...
The black and silver will be the cool colors because no one's buying...
Yeah, and then resale will fall off and then it'll be popular again. But you're taking this roller coaster ride in the meantime, though. So, I mean, there are certain colors, I think, certain classic, non-sort of traditional Porsche colors, I think, that look good. Like, the Irish green, I think, a dark green.
Yeah,
emerald green.
What's paint to sample on even a... I mean, it's probably the same as a GT4.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's almost like
$8,900.
Well,
it's still
you're painting... It's still it's like how much you're painting of a car is what it is. Mm-hmm. So that's tough. But, I would go with just a good metallic... I'd step up to metallic It'd be one of my few options. I'd get the GT Silver. Red. It's, but I ended up going back to it because I'd rather have the good seats. So I went for the better seats.
So if you get these seats, it's only black, right?
Yeah, you have to change it. I believe, and maybe I did it wrong. Maybe someone could correct me, but I tried to play around with it, but every time I tried to change it to that seat, it forced me into an all-black sort of option.
I wonder if that explains how many people don't step up to the sports seats, right? Because that was always my challenge, finding
Or maybe that's why people don't get red that much, because they're limited to certain, you know, configurations. Like, they should, I don't think the shape of the seat should determine what the color is. But I know I'm into red interiors right now.
No, when it's done right, nothing's better than
That's the thing, is that there's like a lot of them that are done that don't look right and it's too much. But if it's done well, if it's kind of more of that oxblood red, if it's a little bit duller, a little muter,
I agree.
Great. Yeah,
so. And it's one of the reasons, you know, it's one argument for getting, you know, if you like the GT4, but you know you want something a little different, getting the new GTS 4.0. Because I think, I don't know exactly what the possibilities are, but I know that I've seen, I want to say brown or, you know, other interior colors which look really, really sharp, but then you go back to like, so close, could have had a GT4, but yeah.
That's what I wonder. I mean, theoretically, I've been thinking about this too, is like, you know, is the GTS 4.0 like the new savvy sort of purchase, or would you just be... I can kind of give you some input on this because now having seen you buy this, this has almost ruined certain cars for me. Where I'm like, you were sending me that perfectly nice, I think 2001 Boxster that was for sale on Craigslist, and it was reasonably priced, like
$7,000 or $8,000 or something.
I just don't even want to look at that anymore. I'm just like, those things are dead to me now. It's like they've just been ruined. So.
Do you know what I would do? So everyone says is the 4.0 GTS the new sort of GT4 touring.
Well, right, and so to finish my thought, my concern is that would be me just spending a ton of money to get a car that's still not this.
Well, it
not
looks just GT4, like the base. Though. I mean, I think maybe it has the sport design front end or something, but it definitely doesn't have the stance or the, you know, in the sweet spot for me. I would have considered an actual GT4 touring. I think the wing is cool and stuff, but I got to have that cool GT front end. That's why the GT3 Touring looks so great. It's not just a base 911 or, you know.
Yeah, so it's just not just the engine.
It's you've got the wheels and the front end or whatever, you know. Yeah, I mean, who cares about the rear wing when you've got those things or whatever. But maybe that'll come. It's probably inevitable that it'll come out.
Well, so is there any, have you heard any, well, so the news coming out now is that everyone's really kind of freaking out about this new spoiler on the new GT3.
Oh, the RS.
Well, no, there's word now. Rumors going around
the GT3,
the GT3 is going to have a really sort of overbuilt, hung from the top.
Yeah,
you know, spoiler.
Apparently, that's the new trend. I don't know. Kind of looks like a periscope or something.
Well, it's for airflow reasons.
Yeah,
so they're not doing it just as like a, you know, as like a fashion trend, but it's actual. The actual cars in the racing classes are trying to switch to that, so that's why Porsche's doing it. But that's kind of getting like people are a little, they're almost not willing to accept that.
No.
Or there are, I should say, some people are a little like on the fence.
Well, it's interesting because like this GT4, the old GT4, they have more of the GT3 RS, the current style wing in the back, and that it's got sort of these contrasting colored risers. Where if you get a non-RS GT3 currently, they don't actually sell them, but the one they were selling up until very recently, it's almost that molded plastic one, and the newer ones say 4.0, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
But I would argue that this actually looks a little more aggressive, but this new one is crazy aggressive. It's like...
Yeah, I pictured
it's
this.
It's literally over
but
the
it
top.
Goes up, like, it literally has gone over the top. it basically is this sort of lattice work. But it's in front and has to come up above it and then come back down and then grab it from the top. But
and the new GT4 RS is supposed to have that as well. So
that's going to be
doing a lot of testing on the Nürburgring. I think the Nürburgring actually closed for the year now. But but it's
so there is going to be a GT4 RS.
There is and it is mean, and you know it's interesting. We're talking about just how the car looks coming down the street and. We recorded you were kind enough to record a couple of videos so I could see what the car looked like coming down the street.
Yeah.
And it's just a way it moves that's different from the non-GT cars. It's got this tension in it, right? Where just the way it moves and the way the stance and everything, it's just a different, it's like a Panther or something, you know, it's just different.
It's a different, it's exactly
and the RS is going to be more of the, you know, more of that even, you know.
No, it's fair because, it's right. It's the way it moves. It's the way it's sort of like the way it doesn't shudder as it goes over bumps and things like that, the way it just sort of like, it's very lithe as it sort of like comes around the corner. It's a different feel to it altogether.
When it goes over a bump, you get that, it goes up and then that's it. Like there's one movement, right?
Yeah.
And then there's none of this reciprocal sort of, you know, repetition.
Which, so on your base Cayman, a car that's, that handles better than 90% of cars on the road, you know, period. You know, and it makes that car look like the Toyota Camry. The GT4 makes your base Cayman look like the Toyota Camry of that world. You know, if that was your world, if your world was the base Cayman is an entry level car and there's nothing else out there, then this it makes it seem like it's just an everyday sedan. You know, and amazing.
It's really different. And again, no disrespect to the non GT cars, because I it wasn't until a couple weeks ago that I had one, and I will defend that base Cayman, you know, with the 4-cylinder turbo, and I'm not the only one. Matt Farah and a couple of the YouTubers, it's got me as fast as hell.
It's got me thinking. It's got me thinking. I'm in this world now where I'm like, I only want the base version of this or the top version.
And
I kind of don't want anything in between.
No, that's
because everything in between is just a compromise. The base version would just continue to surprise me and just continue to put a smile on my face and should be like, this car shouldn't be this good at the base level.
Right.
You know, and it's like, I'm not really interested in anything until we get up to this. You know what I mean? Everything else just to me is just clicking off different options on a spec sheet, basically.
I'm kind of, that's literally what I bought, because like we've talked about, you could spec a base game pretty close to a GT4, and you can certainly spec a GTS.
It's hard, I'll tell you, it's hard to keep it's hard to keep it under $65,000. I mean, you have to work hard to do that.
What do I spec out a base game and configure it to like $141,000?
Well, I bet you could. I don't know, but I feel like how quickly it went. It starts at like, I mean, it says it starts at 59.9 or whatever. It doesn't. It's 61,000, you know, right off the bat, basically. But like, you know, it's hard to keep it in that, you know, it's hard to keep it from creeping up past 65. And I'm not saying it's not worth it at that price, but like, you know, if you get the options you want, but it cruises with, I bet it goes right into $70,000.
My base came in, I got the sport seats and I got the 19-inch wheels versus the 18-inch. I just thought the 18-inch wheels had a little too much sidewall.
Yeah.
You could argue that compared to this car, the 19-inch wheels had a little too much sidewall, what did you end up building?
Well, so I'll send it to you. I built a silver base car with red. I waffle back and forth. At first, on my ideal visual spec, I went with red and black interior.
Yeah.
Smoker's package.
Toolkit.
Obviously, the toolkit.
Unfortunately, that's the name of this episode. Toolkit.
Yeah, there we go. on the picture, you couldn't see where the toolkit went. It didn't really add anything to the picture of it, but I just like to think it's in the frunk in there.
Get it. You just pay for it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they tell you, now you need to go order this on Amazon.
You can't find it. You're not a real enthusiast.
There's actually a really hard to find smuggler's box in the game.
Key stories about like I bought a Suburban or an Escalade from a government auction, and it had these smuggler's compartments or bale of cocaine in the fender or whatever.
So that reminds me, just to get off for a second. So the Toyota Sequoia I own, supposedly the guy who sold it said that his wife lost her engagement ring. And she swears she lost it in the car.
Shut up.
They were never able to find it. They replaced it. They've, filed an insurance claim and replaced it. So I always wonder, like, should I just take the seats out and just
Justin Janko, our mutual friend, I heard you bought a new metal detector.
Oh, yeah. Maybe you can help us out.
From Harbor Freight, so.
Well, and I'm also thinking, like, if you take a metal detector in the car, isn't it going to be going off all the time?
Non-ferrous. At least in theory, right? So it only picks up on gold, silver, lead, that kind of stuff, right?
Maybe.
So
maybe we'll find it. We'll find like $7,000 of value.
My God, it'd be out there right now if I had that car. Or do you think he tells everyone this?
Well, I don't know. I mean, he said
added value.
Well, exactly. It's a treasure hunt for every used car.
How big is this engagement ring?
I don't know, but I mean,
it's going to be disappointing.
I mean, I guess it could be, it could turn out to be like
Worth $5,000 or something.
It could be like a Cubic Zirconia for all we know, but like,
I don't
know.
Find out.
I don't know. So apparently that might be, it's like a treasure hunt.
This is
might be in our
$5,000, that cheap bastard.
I know.
Three 3 months' salary. We gotta find that. Maybe we'll.
Yeah. I'm thinking about moving it along right now. I'm actually kind of getting tired of it.
Not until we find that damn ring.
No, we'll do a search of the car. Well, now that I know about the.
Oh, we'll tear it up like a.
We'll tear it up and we'll donate it to NPR. But we got off subject there. But that's we'll take a break here real quick, and I'll talk a little bit about my dilemma now. And I have to say, it's this GT4.
Like dilemmas.
This GT4 has ruined me, man. It's just
you haven't even driven it yet.
No, well, I don't even want to because that's just gonna end it all for me. This thing has ruined all the reasonably priced sports cars I've looked at.
The door handles are different now. Come to think of it.
Oh, are they?
I don't know. Anyway,
okay.
We'll find out.
We'll take a break.
All right, we'll be back. Yeah. Doug, speaking of options.
Yeah. What would be the coolest option you could possibly, like the most, bespoke option you could get for your car?
I can't imagine anything better than a matching pair of Goodyear sunglasses.
I think that's a good idea. Yeah. I think Goodyear, which makes sunglasses.
G-O-O-D-R.
That's correct. Yeah, recklessly committed to having fun, makes.
Wait, that's their tagline.
I think it's like their mantra. Yeah, yeah. They're a sunglass company. They make polarized sunglasses that are actually designed to not slip or fall off your face.
Now I see all those weird little shapes in everyone's back glass. And
I know that's well because it shows that it's polarized.
It's a fine product. So. I really love the pair. Two pairs.
And they have so many fun color options. So what we've been having fun is, like you said, we've been matching sunglasses to cars. I found you a pair. It's called The Empire Did Nothing Wrong.
And my wife wears them now. She's taken them.
There you go. But it matches your car. So she gets to have fun with this.
She does. And I'm sure every time she puts them on, she thinks of a Porsche. That her husband can't afford. That's in her garage.
She doesn't know that. So it's okay. It's all good. So
she doesn't listen either. So we're safe.
But what we've been challenging people to do is check out their website www.goodyear.com and find a pair of sunglasses that match your cars. So far, we've matched Ryan's Mini GP.
Yes.
We've matched your old Cayman and your new Cayman.
We should include those glasses with the car, but I like those glasses. So
I know you wanted to hold on to them. We should have. Yeah. No, but they didn't give us any swag. So you didn't have to give them extra swag.
But we did bring them swag.
That's true. We did.
They did have our t-shirts. So.
But we've matched. I matched a pair to Will Powers. Targa 4.
Yeah.
I found a great pair for him. So go on.
You know who needs a pair?
Who's that?
Our friend RJ Munt in Tokyo.
I'm working on it.
Oh, sorry.
RJ, if you're listening, we're working on it. I'm on it.
Posted a really nice picture of himself with his 300TE in front of Mount Fuji.
Yes.
And wearing one of our beautiful t-shirts.
Yeah, the Steering Committee Army is worldwide.
Yeah, and if you want a t-shirt, send us an email. We'll send you a t-shirt. We don't have so many listeners yet that we can't send you a t-shirt.
I suppose we need an email first for that, though. So,
you have an email, right?
We do. It's thestearingcommittee@gmail.com.
That's right.
So I need to check it, though. But send it to thestearingcommittee@gmail.com.
We'll send t-shirts to the first, 10 people who...
Sure.
That's going to bankrupt me, but no,
I'm kidding. Oh, no, it's okay. I'm going to pay for the next round. So the next limited edition Steering Committee t-shirts will be in sort of a forest green, I think.
I think so. We did the blue the first time. Those are sold out.
Yeah, those are gone. Those are gone.
That wouldn't have been selling to anyone, but they're gone.
They're gone.
So we need some new ones.
So anyway, so again, check out Goodyear.com. Thanks for helping us out there. So
people asked.
Yeah, a little bit about us. Yeah.
Have asked, who are we?
Yeah.
And I ask myself that sometimes.
I was going to say, I don't know if I can answer that question.
What's the talking head song?
Who is this? And who am I?
Yeah, what is it?
What am I doing here?
It's not my beautiful house. Yeah. You know,
the days go by.
Yeah, it's just not my beautiful car. But
it is right. It is your beautiful car. Yeah.
Well, right now it's the
mostly the bank's car. They let you use it.
Very much.
They let you use it whenever you want, though.
No, it's, it's. Yeah. So, you know, if you're a new listener, or we've been doing this show now over a year, we should have popped a bottle of champagne or something, but I have no money left, so...
Yeah.
We'll get some
fine Andre champagne.
Andre, fine champagne. So who are you, Doug Fogler?
I am Doug Fogler.
The second most famous Doug from Denver.
Yeah.
Who's in the cars.
Into cars, yeah. Yes. In the car segment, yeah. It's very limited or highly qualified title. My name's Doug. I live here in Denver, Colorado now, but I'm from Massachusetts originally.
Yeah.
I'm an attorney, and I have...
So if you leave a shitty comment for us on YouTube, you're getting sued.
Yeah,
I know that's not how it works.
Yeah. Well, I could, but no, I have three kids, which is an interesting, which is, I found is, I heard Chris Harris say this once, having three kids is an interesting thing to do if you're into sports cars, because it does, it certainly limits the choices of what you can do.
Yeah.
I don't know, I've been into cars my whole life.
And what you can afford. I mean, it's bad enough with one kid, so...
Yeah, yeah, one kid seems like a luxury right now, so so enjoy that, so... but yeah, I have a kindergarten age daughter and then two twins. That's true. She did most of the work, in fact, actually. So
Gavin is an architect, very successful.
My wife is an architect here in Denver, Colorado, working for a firm called Tribe Associates. Very busy, doing very well over there. They're extremely busy right now, which is good, considering my expensive taste in cars.
Yeah,
that'll help out a lot. So
married up, Doug.
I absolutely did. Out of my league, and I'm so happy for it. Another top tip. Marry out of your league.
We've talked about how we got in cars or whatever, but
I mean, the short story is that my dad was really into it.
Yeah.
He always had road and tracks lying around, and I just started absorbing it from a young age, and here we are.
Yeah, so, right on. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I'm Ryan.
Who are you?
I'm Ryan.
Who are you?
Living in Denver, people often say, are you related to Shannon Barkey, who was an Olympic skier? But we're probably third cousins or something, but short answer is no, although I'd like to meet her someday.
I saw a picture of her. There did seem to be a family
resemblance.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility.
No, I'll claim her, you know. Yeah, I'm a graphic designer, I guess you could call me.
Mm-hmm.
I work for a big accounting consulting firm. I've worked in advertising. I'm from Chicago, or at least that's where we were for about 20 years before I moved to Denver. Been in Denver for about 6 years now, five and a half, I guess. I'm a Porsche guy. Wasn't always a Porsche guy, but have been for the last three fun cars. See that changing.
And I would say, like, our podcast focuses on Porsche a lot. Yeah, right. We don't set out to be a Porsche podcast, but we do talk about them a lot. It's definitely the enthusiast brand, I think, overall. But I mean, I'm probably the one who dabbles more outside of Porsche than of the two of us.
Yeah, kind of stuck.
But I've never owned one, and maybe once I do, that'll change. So
you will, which I will. So I don't know if that explains who we are, but yeah, we're just two average guys, You know, we've got bills, and you know, we're not
with bills and kids and realities, but we like
to not rich guys or on any sort of.
We like the running joke is that I'm the attorney, you're the one who went to art school, and you're the one who's bought now your third Porsche. So apparently, I made terrible choices in life.
Yeah, and I don't want to shoot my taxes. So, you know, of course, the real secret is only we stopped at one child.
That's another top tip.
She's a great
just to have one child.
She's a good one, much like yours. But
yeah.
So that's kind of who we are. We just decided one day we were gonna. Well, actually, no, we were having pizza, two families together, we were having our own conversation about cars. I think it was your wife, Kathleen, and said, "Hey, you sound like a podcast. Turn on the, you know, hit the record button already." And
we decided to.
Sometimes we forget to hit the record button,
that's happened once or twice. That's mostly my fault, but we were already having these conversations.
Yeah.
We would be having these conversations no matter what. In fact, it's most of our conversations. So why not flip on a mic and just let you guys join in on it.
Here we are.
So what we hope we do is we create an environment where if you're always thinking about cars and you're kind of always like in your head about it, turn on our podcast, listen in, and be like, you're in a safe space. You're here with us. We're doing the same. We're in the trust tree now.
We won't even goof on you if you're driving, you know.
And you probably You probably don't nerd out as much as we do on things. I guarantee that's not the case.
No, no. And I will say, I think, Doug, you're kind of that, what do you want to call it, the stats man or whatever. You're right. You have the, I don't know, I feel like you are the academic of the two, right? And you...
Well,
and it's I'm the driver, maybe more. Like I just like to. Well, I'm not into the mechanics so much. Right. I just like to get into drive.
Well, fair enough. I see now why you're making that distinction. I would actually say, if we're being honest, I would say you're more in command of stats. But you're also the driver, so you get to have both, actually. I don't know what I bring to the table.
Well, I don't even know what that means. What's a driver? I guess I've got that some guys are really into detailing their cars. Some guys are into work, you know, wrenching. Yeah. You know, I just like to drive. That's maybe that's what you are, too.
I would say what I would say to that if that's how we're distinguishing it. I have a lot less free time than I used to, so I don't get to drive as much.
Yeah.
Before I had even my first kid, I was the one who was getting up early on Saturday morning and just driving all day. I was at a time when Kathleen was working a lot. She was working on weekends a lot, and so she would be completely busy. I would go disappear and just go explore Colorado.
Thing.
Yeah, I was in that WRX. I would just go and just explore Colorado. I went from Denver up to Steamboat, Vail and back, like in one day.
When I had the time, that's exactly what I did too.
Yeah. So I love driving. Driving, and I went out on Saturday. I went out in the morning. I got up early. I went out just for a drive, just to go explore a little bit. And I went up into Golden Gate Canyon and did that. But I don't know. I guess if I had to choose, then maybe I'm. I feel like maybe I'm the. How about this? I'm the historian.
The historian. I like that.
I'm the historian. You're the driver. And possibly the stats guy too.
Well, we've talked about this. Some kids, were memorizing baseball stats or whatever. I was never into that.
Yeah.
But I would pour over, my car driver every month. They used to have that panel of all, I think maybe they still do, but that panel in the back with all the quarter mile times and everything, that's what I would, as a kid, I'd sit in my room with like a bowl of cereal on the floor and my magazine when it would come, and it was nothing better.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved it when the magazine came. My household, it was Road and Track. But
we leaned Car and Driver, but we always got Road and Track, I think, as well. Motor Trend back in the day, not so good. I was like Automobile, too.
I loved Automobile, too. That's
it. Kittman was writing.
Yeah. No, my dad was always Road and Track, and he still is to this day.
Well, Peter Egan was probably the best car writer. Although I've mentioned this before, Jason Torchinsky on Jalopnik is killing it lately.
Hmm.
The topics he writes about, like these esoteric sort of taillight design and stuff, right up my alley. I really hopefully have like to have him on the show
point. You're always welcome on our show, Jason.
I'd fly that mofo out just to get him on the show. I think he'd be a fascinating conversation.
But, okay, well that sounds good. I'd love to have him on it. I would say I was more like, so I was into Road and Track, which I thought always was the one that, I would say like of the major brands back then, that was the one that was really focused, I felt like, on photography and just like, sort of like, this image of like sort of the glamour of the whole thing. And you were always like in this exotic locales over in Europe.
More motorsport too, I think.
It did cover, it's Road and Track. So they did a fair amount of coverage of motorsports. And I was really into, honestly, I was really into IndyCar and Formula One when I was in junior high and high school. I'm actually starting to get back into Formula One now.
Okay.
I
lived in Indianapolis growing up, so I got into IndyCar a little bit.
Okay.
Kind of that heyday of IndyCar in the modern era, Rick Mears and Andretti and Fittipaldi and all that.
Yeah.
I've never actually went to the race, but every year we'd go to the time trials or Carburation Day or whatever.
Oh, okay.
So I think that certainly helped plant the seed.
I've never been to the Indianapolis 500 for the race.
Yeah.
But I've been to the track. We drove when we were driving through. We stopped. My wife and I stopped there. We took a tour in a bus around the track.
You have to.
It's hallowed ground.
Yeah.
I went to the IndyCar race a number of times. There was one that came to New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Other IndyCar races. Yeah. I've been to that, and I got to meet. I got into the paddock. I got autographs from drivers and things like that. In my garage, I actually have an autographed poster from one of my favorite drivers, which is going to sound strange. You may not even know who this guy is. Jacques Villeneuve?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, he was an F1 guy, right?
Yeah, he was IndyCar first. He won the Indy 500. He won the Indy 500 in the championship. He actually won the Indy 500 in 5. I love telling the story.
Okay.
He got black flagged early in the race, had to lap everybody twice to get back on the lead lap, and then ended up winning the race.
That's amazing.
1995. Yeah.
Wow.
Check it out.
Wow.
And then he went into Formula One right after that.
Yeah.
And within 2 years won the world championship there. And then unfortunately kind of flamed out. But I think he's still one of my favorite drivers.
Yeah. So, right on. Yeah. From
Canada.
That's cool.
Son of a very well-known Formula One driver named Gilles Villeneuve.
Right. Cool.
So, that's kind of a little bit about us.
Had a couple people ask, and
a couple people ask. Maybe we'll have to familiarize people with our car history.
A couple of jokes.
Yeah, our illustrious car history.
Yeah,
and we'll tell us about that. But
so
yeah,
you have a dilemma.
Slight dilemma.
I don't know what this is.
So I was kind of off the BRZ for a little while, but these teaser shots of this new one.
Yeah.
I'm back in.
It's gonna be a very different car though. It's hooked in. 100 horsepower, right?
It's gonna have only, well, their estimate now is 260, so 200 to 260.
It's a 60.
About 250 pounds per cubic foot, but that might be perfect.
Also a 4-cylinder turbo?
It's a different engine. It's not okay. It's a different engine than you, they're not doing it the way you would expect. I think it's an engine that they actually share with like the Forester and maybe the Tribeca.
Oh.
It's like a different version of that engine. So yeah. Not just the WRX engine.
They still make the Tribeca?
I think they
make that for like 2 years in the late 2000s.
Is it the Tribeca? What's the big SUV?
Oh, yes, I know what you're talking about. I don't know what that is though. Like every once in a while I see one and it's like, it just looks like a puffy, like.
Yeah. You know, oh, super, Ascent. The Ascent.
I couldn't have told you that name if you'd
paid me. They picked this engine. It's kind of like this engine where they they did this in a very interesting way. This GT4.
Yeah.
The audience can't see him pointing to the GT4. You know where
but
they
it's
basically
in there,
it's in there. No, but they got to.
I've never seen this engine either. So it's a.
But
may not actually be a 6-cylinder.
Yeah, I know, right? For all we know, right? but. I'm it's not, it's going to be, so it's going to get released officially publicly on the 18th of this month, so I'll be watching that closely. Won't be available until late 2021.
This month? Oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
But they'll finally release it. They've been teasing it, though. We don't know.
Okay.
But it looks, I've seen spy shots, I've seen camo shots, I've seen some bits and pieces of it. It's not like I consider the current BRZ to be a really good-looking car, it's just not an ugly car.
Yeah.
And there's a difference.
Yeah.
You can make just a normal looking car that you don't hate, and then if you like everything else about it, you can get on board with the styling of it.
It's kind of anonymous.
It's not. Yeah, it's okay. It's almost like it's like a generic sports car almost in some ways. Like, but it's. I don't think it's bad looking, which is important. The new one, we'll see. But the point is, they are going to address the one major issue that everyone's always had with that car is the horsepower. And so
it has 200 horsepower. But it doesn't feel
the current
like
one. Yeah, it's got a weird torque dip in it, and it does. You have to work it. It's one of the best platforms, handling platforms that's ever been produced.
Yeah,
you know, especially at that price point, it's just so fun and lively and just like
it is
amazing.
So good.
Yeah, amazing
but
to drive.
That's the first thing you think of, like, oh god, this car can handle twice the power.
It can handle so much more. It can handle, you know, there are guys out there driving around with 500 horsepower versions of this car, and the platform can handle it. But I think. And I think maybe that's why they picked this number. I've always theorized that 250, 260 would be perfect for that car. So it gives like plenty of shove, but like it doesn't overwhelm it. And you still enjoy enjoy the platform.
Matt Farah always talks about the sweet spot for like a Canyon Carver being, you know, about 400 horsepower, give or take, and about 3,000 pounds, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is what the GT4 is pretty much, you know, I guess it's got what? Depending where you look, 412, 415, 420 horsepower, and it's, I think, a little over 3,000 pounds, or maybe 3,100 or something. But the GT, the 86 platform is quite a bit lighter than even the Cayman, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't quote me off the top of my head, but it's got that it's got that perfect. I think it's got a very good power to weight ratio, especially if they go up to if they go to 260.
Yeah, I think it'll be an amazing car.
I think and then I would have a warranty. I would have to buy one of these used ones. I'm not sure. So my dilemma is, so this new one comes out, the old ones will probably drop off a cliff in value. So do I still get one of those that's relatively new?
But they've held their value pretty well to this point, haven't they?
Yeah, but there's never been any. I mean, now, you're maybe right. Or do I just go get one of these? If it's priced around the same as the one right now, which would be in the mid to upper 20s and into the 30s, I think that's still reasonable.
You think it won't be higher?
No, because because Toyota's actually, they're still doing it with Toyota.
Yeah.
Yeah, Toyota doesn't want it to dip too much into the Supra, especially the 4-cylinder one.
Yeah.
You know, so I bet they price it very similar.
Yeah.
Basically, like same price plus inflation.
And I don't care if BMW built most of the new Supra or whatever. Let's give Toyota credit. You know, where credit is due.
Yeah.
They have two.
They're about
sports
to have
cars right now.
Yeah, they have two completely different sports cars. One with like a bunch of different engine options in it. Yeah. Well, but it's got a 4-cylinder and it's got an automatic, and then
Even
the Supra has like two distinct versions of itself, and it still has the GT86, and I'd say give them credit, they're gonna give it a second life, they're gonna give it a generation two, So there'll still be two versions of that. So
yeah, you know, but Nissan's not, well, no, I was saying Nissan's not making a sports car these days, but they actually
are. They are still making very old sports car. They're building a classic.
Yeah, so. That's right.
And they still have the GTR too. You can call that.
That's true too. I would say that's almost. So then, I don't want to get into all of the discussion here.
Yeah.
But I don't know what compelled me to look up the. I guess I googled the difference between sports car, supercar, and hypercar, or whatever. I don't know how. So, like, where do you draw the line?
Well,
in the GT. Well, so the reason I looked so.
Okay, Porsche, so in your world, in your research, where does the GT4 end up?
So GT4 wasn't in the list, but for okay. Porsche, they said that the supercar starts with the turbo, but that the GT3 was still a quote unquote sports car. I believe is how they broke. In my like, it's just the logic seemed off to me, but.
Well, okay.
That's the whole episode. We should dive into that.
Why don't we dive into that next time? I feel like I'm sounding like your therapist. We're gonna dive into that next session.
We're gonna dig deep.
But I think all right. Well, I'll give you my thoughts on this conversation
real
next
quick.
Time. But well, real quick, I think that the terms are it's guys like us are the ones who actually like come up with it. It's not like calling something a pickup truck or a minivan. It's like there's no defined term for it.
Yeah,
I would consider this a supercar.
See, I probably wouldn't.
But I would consider the GT3 also a supercar. So.
Well, I would say no. I think that it's close enough in performance, especially to the 9911 GT3.
Yeah.
They would have to be in the same.
But I think that's what it's really just you compare. It's more important to compare it to the peers. It's not really it's the term that you come up with it. But we have to come up with these terms because
you gotta categorize it.
Supercar used to be like the top. Category that used to be the king of the jungle, and then but now we have to have hypercars.
Well, unless
and now
we have to have the current base Cayman. Here I go building up the Cayman again, but the current base Cayman, if that had come out 10, 12 years ago, would have been a hypercar probably. You know?
That car would have been significantly faster than like the 959 in its day.
Yeah, you know, of course, hypercar is a new supercar at least.
It would have kept up with like, but it would have been right there keeping up with an F40 on a track, you know, not necessarily for top speed.
Truth? How a current base Cayman is, I believe, as fast as an F40.
Yeah.
Or a 959.
Yeah.
It's crazy. You know?
Yeah. This is GT4. Maybe not top end speed, but like on
a
track.
Well, that would probably be the one.
Yeah, but on a track acceleration 0 to 60, 0 to 100, it's right there with it. You know.
Well, they talk about this. The new GT4 is. I believe is faster on the Nürburgring as the Carrera GT, as the there's a whole litany of cars that this was as fast or faster. I mean, it was kind of shocking, you know. But of course, then I see that the AMG, what's the GT63S sedan? So it's not the two door.
Okay.
It's that sort of weird turtle shaped four door version.
Okay.
Actually beats the GT4 around the Nürburgring by a full second. And it's a four door. It's the fastest luxury.
Really?
Car you can buy right now.
By how many seconds?
By second. But it's a four-door boat. You know what I mean? So cars are just ridiculous anymore.
Cars are ridiculous. Yeah, there's so much performance out there.
Yeah. And you know that car's not making it up in the corner. So it must just be so fast.
No, I was going to say, I feel like it must be just, it must have like a really high top end.
It's got to. But
yeah.
No, we'll have to dive in because I have some thoughts about that. And something that's a hypercar. It's sort of what an exotic car used to be when we were growing up. It's sort of the top of the top. It's the stuff that looks funky. It's tough to drive. You know, it can't daily drive it. And so that brings you to what? Koenigsegg, you know,
I guess so.
Pagani, you know.
But I think even the hypercars are so much more, they're so easy to drive compared to the old things. Like, I mean, they used to make it sound like a Countach was like a whole... Like,
but then,
deal that you got into just
then,
to take it down to the corner.
But then
like,
Garrett talks about, I think he dailies his Countach, so it's who knows who to believe anymore. And I've never driven a Countach.
I've never driven one. I mean, I know they're hard to back up, but otherwise, maybe, I don't know.
I just remember I had a flashback the other day when I was probably high school or soon after, and I was with my dad, and we were driving out the country somewhere, I think downstate Illinois or something, and out of nowhere, there comes a black Countach. Like in Champaign, Illinois or something. No one has a Countach in Illinois. We're probably in our Jeep Cherokee or a minivan or whatever we were driving at the time, and how I made my dad chase this thing.
Turn around, Dad.
Well, we were in the country, and this thing, it was just, like, it was the first time I'd ever seen a Countach.
You always remember that.
The tail lights were this special shape, and it was just, you know, that little lightning bolt thing on the back, you know, it was just amazing. But
I remember poring over all those details.
Right, right.
Remember how wide the tires were?
Well, I mean, they were 335 or something.
Right? I know. Well, it looked like a cement mixer.
But on a 50-inch
compared
wheel.
To cars. Yeah, I know.
You know,
yeah.
it's just insane. And Fair talks about how, like, Pirelli, like, every 5 years they make a batch. And then you have to, like,
get on that list.
Yeah. We're way over. We should probably wrap this up.
We'll wrap it up right here. So we're reminiscing about our car memories here. Yeah. We'll wrap it up for the moment. So
yeah. So yeah, good conversation. I just realized you went from Bruce Beer to a Rolling Rock, and that must taste like swill.
I'm actually okay with it. I'm surprisingly okay with it. It's like a palate cleanser.
Well, thank you, Bruce Beers. Thank you, Gooder Sunglasses, for your support. And we will talk to you
soon. We'll be back soon. We'll reconvene soon. Thanks.